Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
When it comes to end-of-annum accolades, it's been a big year for Massachusetts faces. Time magazine deigned to bestow its Person of the Year award on Harvard grad and Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg. The Boston Globe magazine has been picking its Bostonian of the Year for 7 years, and for 2010, drumroll please, the Bostonian of the Year is none other than the man who was the freshest face in Washington, Massachusetts junior senator Scott Brown. Here he is during his victory speech last January, accurately predicting that his win meant trouble for Democrats around the country.
And for them, it's just the beginning of an election year filled with many, many surprises, I can tell you that. They will be challenged again and again across this great land. And when there's trouble in Massachusetts, rest assured, there's trouble everywhere, and they know it.
Joining us to talk about the year the junior senator has had and about the Globe's choice of him for this honor is the reporter who wrote yesterday's Boston Globe magazine article on Scott Brown. He's Neil Swidey. Welcome to Radio Boston, Neil.
Great to be here, Magna. Welcome back.
Well, Neil, I actually have to point out that we've already had a listener write to us to say adamantly that Scott Brown is not a Bostonian, that he's from Wrentham, and so maybe you should have called him the Bay Stater of the Year. But even just the idea that he's been called a Bostonian and isn't from there shows how the senator is still kind of a controversial figure here in Massachusetts. So why pick him?
Well, he is still controversial in that way. As far as geography, we get that every year, and I've actually encouraged our editors to actually write a note in next year's issue that says we employ a loose definition of Bostonian, namely someone who has an impact on the news of Greater Boston and Massachusetts as a whole. As I'm sure you know, with the title of your show every once in a while, explore areas beyond the city limits.
Boston and beyond, exactly.
But as far as Scott Brown and the choice, when you really look at 2010, I think you see the year kind of bookended by Scott Brown as someone who's driving the news, first in his surprising election to fill Ted Kennedy's seat at the beginning of the year. And at the end of the year, in his role kind of having outsized influence as a junior senator, the junior most junior senator, in his ability to impact legislation and getting things through from the tax cut plan to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, to the START treaty, he really did have an impact.
Well, and that impact was largely because he showed a surprising, maybe to some people, willingness to cross party lines in a Washington that, you know, may talk the bipartisanship talk, but doesn't necessarily walk it. And yet Scott Brown did.
That's exactly right. And I think, you know, as a lot of senior senators left the stage this year in 2010, a lot of them talked about bipartisanship, like it was this dusty bauble, that you could just wax nostalgic about. And really, I think what you did see in some cases with Brown, with the senators from Maine, is that there was still an impact for more moderate politicians on both sides of the party to have a role. And I think it remains to be seen whether that happens in the year ahead, but it's definitely harder than in years past to maintain that role.
Well, you know, that willingness to cross party lines, it actually hasn't pleased many of the very people who put Scott Brown into office, the Tea Party members who may not necessarily be in a moderate frame of mind. Some Tea Party members say they might try to field a primary challenger to Scott Brown for exactly this reason.
Yes, and I think what's interesting about the Tea Party and Brown in their relationship is that it's not exactly clear what it is. The Tea Party took a lot of credit for Brown's election back in January of 2010, but that kind of connection between the two, obviously, I think Brown is looking ahead and he's got to run for re-election in 2012, which means he's running for re-election next year, mm-hmm. this year, 2011. And he realizes, I think, that if he is kind of seen as a lockstep Republican or a Tea Party vote, that's going to be hard for him to get reelected in Massachusetts, especially what we saw happen in November here. So he's kind of straddling those lines. And it'll be interesting. Some people think that a Tea Party challenge to Brown could actually help him with the more independent and sort of more conservative Democrats who voted for him in kind of shoring up his independent streak.
Mm-hmm. Senator Brown is such a quixotic figure. I mean, we have to remind ourselves that, yes, as you said, this is his first year in office, and he took the place of the late Senator Ted Kennedy, of course, who held that seat for almost half a century. And the early critics of Senator Brown said that here was a man who wasn't intellectually up to snuff to take up the mantle that Senator Kennedy had left behind. But you remind us in your article that there was a similar set of criticisms for Senator Kennedy when he first took office back in the 60s.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And people forget that because we think of Ted Kennedy in the late years. But no one really focuses on Ted Kennedy of 1962 when he first ran for U.S. Senate, and no one thought he was qualified, not even his brothers. Basically, it was Ted Kennedy and his father who sort of thought that it was time for him to run. And some of the same type of critic that Scott Brown faced, Ted Kennedy heard from those people as well. You know, the intellectual class were sort of appalled that he would be running for Senate, and I think you saw that as well. Brown, of course, was older than Ted Kennedy. Ted Kennedy was, you know, just turned 30, the constitutional minimum age to run. Scott Brown is 50. But Scott Brown, despite spending 11 years on Beacon Hill, had almost no legislative record to speak of. We went back and reviewed the bills that he sponsored that became law, and there were you know, just a handful of them in the House and only one in the Senate, and almost all of them dealt with boilerplate issues about liquor licenses and basic things like that. He really did not have a legislative record to speak of.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why people found 2010 and Senator Brown's performance in Washington so surprising, because, you know, you think he doesn't have the legislative chops, but then he goes to Washington and he's sort of the man in the middle. He's that 41st vote that gave him an incredible amount of bargaining power. But now, with the GOP having captured many more seats in the Senate, and you've pointed out in your article that Senator Brown is losing his really prime office suite in the Senate office building there. Is that going to change for Scott Brown? Is he going to be able to drive the same hard bargains as he was this past year?
I think that remains to be seen, but I think logically you would think no. You know, I sort of used him, his vacating the swell office that he inherited of Ted Kennedy from Ted Kennedy as a metaphor for kind of what's going on here. He did have this unusual elevation as a junior senator, the junior most junior senator, that not only did he have this leverage, but he had this nice office that everyone else wanted. Those things are gone now. The reality is setting in. The Republican leadership does not need him and his vote specifically to push through a filibuster or to you know, get the numbers on it. And so as a consequence of that, I think that leadership is going to be much less willing to see him depart from what the leadership wants, at the same time, as we talked about before, where he's going to really need to be positioning himself in Massachusetts as a different kind of Republican, as an independent Republican. So, and we should remember that he wasn't a renegade. He voted with his party leadership most of the time, more than 80% of the time. But it was in those key areas where he did depart from the leadership that he really made his name.
So in that case, do you see him as potentially vulnerable for his 2012 reelection bid?
I think there's two ways to look at that. And the first is when you look at what happened in November in Massachusetts, where not a single Republican won a congressional race or a statewide office, you'd think, yes, he is more vulnerable because the kind of wave that happened nationally did not happen here. On the flip side to that, though, is there is some logic that voters will probably take into account of having a Republican when you've got Republicans controlling the House and in maybe in ascendancy in the Senate, and having a different kind of Republican that maybe does have sway there, because the reality is he did matter more as a Republican this year than probably a Democrat would have in that place.
Well, from beginning, middle to end, 2010 was Senator Scott Brown's year, but we'll see about 2011 and also 2012 when he's got to put his hat back in the ring and run for re-election. Neil Swiety, you wrote the profile of Senator Scott Brown that appeared in yesterday's Boston Globe magazine. You guys have named this junior senator the Bostonian of the Year. Neil, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
For a link to the full Boston Globe profile of Senator Scott Brown, go to our website, wbur.org/Boston.